top trends researcher, publisher, of course, of the Trends Journal, who joins us today. Welcome back, Gerald Salente.
Thanks for having me on. You know, there's a number of things going on, of course. Everyone's interested in where the markets are going and the geopolitical front. But it's interest rates. The United States interest rates are going up. I mean, they're back now to April 2008 highs. Eight rises since, 2015. And while the rest of the world is slowing down. So how are other economies going to do when you look at the global picture? And that's what we're looking at. So, for example, let's take currencies. You have, it's not only the Argentinian peso, what is it down, over 50% against the dollar this year, trying to stop the run on it. They have interest rates at 60%. You know, you go around the world, Turkey, their currency, India, their rupee is at an all-time low against the dollar. So the point being, the higher the interest rates go, the stronger the dollar gets, and the dollar is getting strong not because of the huge debt burden that we have in the United States, but because the other economies are so weak, so their currencies are going down. So the stronger the dollar goes, the lower their currencies go. And what do they have? Oh, about $63 trillion worth of debt in the emerging markets, and a lot of it's dollar-based. So the dollar gets stronger, their currencies get weaker, their debt load gets heavier. And so you're looking, for example, now in I mentioned India, and let's put this all together. And that's our system, by the way. It's called Globalnomic, making connections between different fields. And the other field to look at are oil prices. We're looking now at Brent crude back to 2014 levels, November 2014 levels. So what happens, I mentioned the rupee is at an all-time low against the dollar. And how much of their energy do they import? Oh, 80%. Okay, what is oil-based? Dollar-based. So they have to pay it in dollars, and their rupee's declining. So while we're seeing the United States economy doing relatively well because of the tax breaks, basically, the rest of the world is slowing down. And now with this rising oil prices and rising interest rates, if we're saying if oil hits $100 a barrel, you're going to see not only an economic decline worldwide, but market crashes.
No, exactly. We've seen the Brent crude contracts head towards 100, and a lot of top analysts now are looking for triple digits in West Texas as well. We're looking at the potential for a flattening yield curve. That could invert as soon as 2019 as the Fed winds down its QE policies. The St. Louis Fed, you can clearly see the balance sheet contracting for the first time. Add to that the fact that we have the PBOC, the Bank of Japan, really starting to talk hawkish and give less dovish forward guidance on their plans for their economy. You know, I think the greenback has had it good for a while, and that's why I'm kind of surprised, and I know a lot of people were, by the big sell-off in the U.S. dollar last week, because with everything going for it, you'd think the dollar would be doing better than it is.
Well, on the precious metals front, you know, the dollar, going first with the dollar, I mean, nothing goes straight up or straight down when conditions are as they are now. You don't have a radical situation going on. Yeah, then they go right down. But we don't have that right now. So the dollar gained a lot of strength. The other ones lost a lot of power. But look what's going on. I mean, why are they gaining strength? They're raising interest rates. And all of these countries combat their declining currencies. So we only see that as a temporary against the dollar because their economies are weak. I mean, look what's going on in China. You know, you have investment in China now, in internal investment, infrastructure investment. It's down to 1992 levels. And you're looking at more state-operated businesses buying up more and more businesses to keep it going. It's not like we're looking at strong economic growth. And then we're looking at you mentioned a number of them, European Central Bank. I mean, they're not expected to raise interest rates until maybe next summer. So the dollar is gaining strength not because the economy is doing so great, although, of course, we have a stronger economy than everyone else's, only because of the tax cuts that have juiced the equity markets and temporarily boosted the economy. but the other ones are doing much worse. So we're looking at, again, the we've been writing about this now. It was our top trend, actually, in 2018, a market shock mass murder. And what we were talking about, what's going to shock the markets, is war outbreaking in the Middle East, particularly going against Iran. And you hear Israel saying they're not going to allow Iran to stay in Syria? I mean, who are they to say that? And as we well know, a Russian plane just got shot down last week because the Syrian defense fired at incoming missiles being shot by Israeli planes and hit the Russian reconnaissance plane. And now Russia's putting missile systems, anti-missile systems, into Syria. Something that doesn't make the news at all, because we've got to talk about, you know, Me Too, this or that, and the Kavanaugh thing, and on and on and on, and that's all they do in America. They sell it in the media. No one's talking about the atrocity going on in Yemen. And where is Yemen located? Oh, yeah, that strategic point where all oil, so much oil flows out of the Middle East. So what we're looking at are escalating war, not only in talk, but in action. And if that happens, you're going to see oil prices spike and the global economy crash. Again, you're looking at currencies declining. Oil is dollar-based. They're going to have to pay more for less. So the United States is the only economy that's really showing any kind of strength. And again, it's artificially boosted. We're seeing gold prices going down now because of high interest rates. It's as simple as that. But we also, and we don't give financial advice, we believe gold is at its bottom. We gave the 1,200 mark. We said there, around thereabouts, and that's where it's been fluctuating around. But gold is recognized as a safe haven asset. If you're a trader, that's one thing. If you're a long-time buyer, as I am, that's another thing.
War, you know, it's a necessary evil. But the funny thing about the war specter is when you let that genie out of its container, you know, you have that tendency for things to not go quite the way you anticipated. I mean, how many times have we heard, well, we thought this would be a 3-month conflict at most. Before you know it, it's 4 years or 6 years. And, you know, the whole world is involved. We're a very interconnected global community now. It's all interconnected through telecommunications. Leads me to the next question for you. With these trade barriers, i.e. taxes on imported and exported goods, China not terribly pleased with our actions. You know, most of my guests, they're much more polarized. Either they think this is a terrible idea, that tariffs will ultimately destroy global economies, or they believe that tariffs are necessary, could do the United States and the rest of the world some good. Where do you stand?
Well, I stand on, we're doing business. Let's just call it a business deal and begin it and end it with that. Am I going to do business with you if you're making a lot more money than I am and I'm losing money? And when we look at the whole tariff issue, we're talking peanuts here with China and the United States. Even at the worst scenario, you're looking, according to China, it's only going to affect their GDP at 0.7%. That's nothing. And again, look at the imbalance. So now let's put it into its context. I just mentioned about, you're looking at the rupee, for example, the Indian rupee. This is a major economy that is declined at all-time lows against the dollar. 80% of their energy is imported. Oil is dollar-based. What are they doing now? They're putting tariffs on imports. Oh, they're not alone in doing that. Indonesia's doing it. One country after another is doing it. They're putting tariffs on imports. It's being blown out of proportion. This is not a trade war, it's a renegotiation. And the reality is, and I've been writing about this and talking about this, as it was happening back in the 90s, that NAFTA was only a benefit for the multinationals. And you look at the facts. What's our trade deficit with Mexico now? Yeah, about $71 billion. What was it before NAFTA? Yeah, we were running about equal. Again, we're talking merchandise trade deficit. $17 billion merchandise trade deficit with Canada. So these are going to be renegotiations But what happens with the media, they put it at the extremes. The BS that every day markets are moving up and down. Why? Because of trade tariffs, because of trade war fears. Oh, yeah? And the U.S. equity markets are up how much this year? About 9% S&P? So tell me then, every day the markets go up and down because of trade? No. The markets are moving because of economic fundamentals, P.E. ratios, earnings, GDP numbers, retail sales, purchasing manager index, etc.
On the one hand, we hear from our more seasoned economic analysts, if they believe it's really been stimulus by our Fed policymakers that has sustained this supposed economic miracle over the last decade. Without the balance sheet going to record levels, the longest period of ZIRP rates, obviously, in the history of modern economics, we wouldn't have seen those numbers you're pointing to, which are really the best unemployment figures in at least 17 years. That's the national unemployment rate, that is, at least. And then, of course, we're seeing some relatively strong GDP figures. So against that backdrop, if you look at a lot of the numbers coming through, I mean, we see Sears shutting down its doors, Radio Shack, just numerous retail behemoths across the board, malls closing down, and it seems to be going to the online arena with Amazon at the top of that heap. Do you really believe that retail sales are that strong?
Well, yeah, I'm in the camp of that there would be no recovery without zero interest rate, negative interest rate policy, and quantitative easing. You know, so no, it's a false economy. And as far as the retailers, you go back to our 1997, 1998 Trends Journal, and we wrote about dying brands in the new millennium. You know, these are all dying brands, Campbell's Soups. We warned all of them, by the way. We did major stories on this. They haven't reestablished their brands. Now, of course, as well, you're looking at a changing environment. The malls, of course, are dying. I wrote in my book, Trends 2000, a Warner book, national bestseller, in 1997, The Pall on the Malls, predicting that malls would be closing around the country, simply for two reasons, overbuilt and all the same. There used to be a thing called mom-and-pop stores and main streets where you had diversity of product. Different looks, different styles, different tastes. With the multinationals taking over and the big ones grabbing everything, it's all of the same everywhere. That's why you have the malls closing down. And that's why you have main streets, like up here in Colonial Kingston and other places, revitalized because of the uniqueness and the diversity. These are trends that you can see.
You know, there's another interesting component, I think, to the story. If you take a look at Amazon and online retailers, they have the narrowest margins. Why? Well, they don't have large overheads, transferring a big number of their costs to delivery services in today's online razor-sharp margin economy.
And that when you're looking at online sales, them being responsible for the pull on the malls in the retail sector, what percentage of e-commerce sales accounted for all of retail sales in the United States last year? Only 9%. And the number is only expected to reach 12.4% in 2020. So, yes, they're going to be grabbing a share, but it's really it's the lack of trend analysis, forecasting, inventiveness, and taking new directions by a very stagnant U.S. industry.
That 9% that you referred to, I would wager that's the higher-end product. It's not your tube of toothpaste. It's not your shampoo. It's not the items you'll pick up at a local grocery or a pharmacy or Walmart or Target or Costco. They're going to be the higher-ender, the laptop, the cell phones, the mobile phones, the iPads. We used to count on, the large department store that could either be freestanding, the Best Buy, you know, the CompUSA, things of that nature. And then, of course, the satellite department stores that held the malls together. Can you give us a few more thoughts as to why you're convinced we may have finally seen the ultimate nadir on gold and silver?
A Well, it's the cost of production. What is it on average if you go from Peru to, it costs about $1,200 an ounce to pull it out of the ground. So it's not going to go much lower than that. And again, we're also looking at what is the fundamental value of gold for so many people that buy it? And that's a safe haven asset. And what you, everyone knows that, you know, the market, I shouldn't say everyone knows, but there's a lot of speculation out there that the markets are well overvalued and overleveraged, and this is going to come down at some point. And it's not only in the equity markets, real estate markets are also way overvalued. You're seeing also now people lowering their prices for the first time in years on a lot of both commercial and residential properties around the country, and particularly not only in the country. I mean, take a look what's going on in Australia as well, a very red-hot real estate market cooling down. And then again, you have rising interest rates that are going to be putting more and more pressure on that. So when you have extremely overvalued sectors, when they go down, they don't go down slowly. So that's why we're saying between the overvalue markets in real estate and the stocks and equities, with war drums beating louder in the Middle East, we're just saying gold has been and will be the ultimate safe haven. And we believe prices are, I've been saying this on your show, it has to be a couple of years now, that it's going to be around $1,200. And that's where it is. And that's where it's, you know, a couple of dollars below, a couple of dollars above. So we believe it's at the bottom. And the opportunity for it to rise, gold has to go over $1,475 an ounce. Well, $1,450, excuse me, for it to gain strength. And it hasn't done that in over 5 years. So those are the levels we're looking at.
This theme, as you say, or this trend in paper assets, you know, U.S. equities, the Dow hit another 138-year record high. There's some really compelling cases and arguments by some of our top folks that we could see much higher new highs ahead in those paper assets. They're chasing that capital gains. They're chasing the next hot flyer, the next Netflix, Amazon, Microsoft, and many new names out of China. What's going to turn them on to gold and silver?
It's two different buyers. It's the ones for the long term, and it's the ones that are trading to make money short term. So you want to have, we're coming out with our new, the New Trends Journal, and we're looking at our top trends. And one of the things we looked at, we call it Economic 9/11. And so when you have this scenario building, where you want to have security, that's what you're looking at. I don't buy, living in the country, I don't buy a generator to use every day. I use it for when the lights go out, the electricity goes down, and I have it, gold, in this current market situation. If it was a different market situation, we'd say buy, buy, buy. And now we're saying buy and hold. And again, we're not giving financial advice. We're giving trend forecasts. So that's what we're looking at. And as far as the markets, we believe they're near the top. We believe they may go up a little bit more, but they're peaking. Because as interest rates go higher, that cheap money flow is going to slow down. And that's the reality of it. So you're looking at merger and acquisition activity at all-time high. The tax cuts that Trump gave, you saw what happened. You're looking at stock buybacks at $1 trillion this year estimated. There are over 800 billion now, and that's going to wear out. So we believe the peak is, we're at it.
What you'd probably advise people then to start thinking about overweighting, you know, some precious metals, maybe bonds as opposed to shares? Or are you looking like, you know, some of our more extremely bearish guests that this could be the top?
And how could people ignore what's going on in the emerging markets? You're looking at the emerging markets indexes, they're in bear market territory. Look at the Shanghai index, the Hang Seng, they're in bear market territory. They're down over 20%. I mentioned what's going on in India. Now they have tariffs on imports because they're afraid of where their economy is going. We see more danger ahead than positive growth. And again, we are definitely in the camp that the only reason why there has been any kind of equity market recovery is because of all the cheap money flow going in. And just to put it into perspective of the general economy, in the United States, since 2009, when the recovery began, 95% of the wealth went to the 1%. The rest of the people are struggling. So no, this is no great stock market rebound. And at some time, these schemes end. And we believe the end is nearer than the future of growth continuing.
When you enter a fiat system, when all the money, all the power, all the wealth accumulates, the top financial institutions, and in a tiny fraction of the top 1% of the elite. The reality is, sure, there's plenty of jobs, but you're earning on a real basis probably less than you were 20 or 30 years ago.
Oh, you absolutely are. There's no question about it. And the only reason why incomes are going up at any level at all is because people are working longer and have more jobs. Those are facts. And again, you follow the money. That's the name of the game. And right now, executives are selling off their company's stock at record paces. We just saw in September that stock sales by company executives reached almost $6 billion, according to TrimTabs. And that's the highest September in a decade. And August was over $10 billion of insider sales. And that was also a 10-year record. So they know what's going on. This whole thing has been juiced by record stock buybacks and merger and acquisition activity at both of them at record highs. We're saying in this time, in this climate, that gold is a safe haven asset. Gerald Celente's GC's 3 G's, guns, gold, and a getaway plan. You know, and it's global. You know, somebody just bought Time Magazine. Yeah, Time Magazine. Last week's news tomorrow. The Trends Journal is tomorrow's news today. History before it happens. Money back guarantee. The new trend. It used to be a quarterly. Now it's a monthly. You will not find this information anywhere else. It's only $129 a year. Again, money back guarantee if you don't like it. TrendsResearch.com or TrendsJournal.com. And, you know, as I said, I'm 71 now. You know, I try to do everything I can to stay loose. And thank you, Chris. And again, thank you for all that you do.